The time is now 11:59 p.m. We're back in the record for OPAPA 16-002.
Where we left off, we had just finished a testimony of Angela Cabrera, and Ms. Bryson, we're still in your case in chief, so you may call your next witness.
Okay, and that would be Jolene Evangelista, please.
Ms. Evangelista, please take the stand.
And raise your right hand. Please state your name for the record.
Jolene Evangelista.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Ms. Wrightson, you're with me.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Ms. Evangelista.
Good afternoon.
And just once again for the record, can you please say how long you've been employed at GCC?
14 and a half years.
And your position is? Your position title with GCC?
Currently, it's the Procurement and Inventory Administrator.
Okay, thank you. Now, on January 25 of 2016, did GCC issue the IFV in question here, it's number GCC-FB-006, seeking services to redesign, develop, host, and maintain a mobile-responsive GCC website for a three-year contract period with option to renew annually for two additional consecutive years?
Yes.
Did the IFB state that the bid packets were to be submitted no later than 10 a.m. on February 9, at which time the bid opening would occur?
Yes.
Thank you. And does the IFB state that the prevailing bidder must present a business license expiring June 30 of 2016 upon issuance of an award of the contract?
Yes.
Thank you. And on February 5th of 2016, did GCC issue amendment number 1 to the IFB?
Yes.
And did amendment number 1 extend the bid opening and thereby the bid packet submission date deadline from 10 o'clock on February 9 to 10 o'clock on February 15?
Yes.
Okay. And did amendment 1 also state that GCC did not have a preference on the development tool for the website and that both proprietary and non-proprietary options are welcome?
Yes.
And did it also state that the bidders could submit both options in their bid proposal if they would like to?
Yes.
Thank you. Now, did your office send a copy of Amendment 1 to the appellant Walmart?
Yes.
Thank you. And were there two bid packets submitted for this IFB?
Yes.
Okay. And were both of those bid packets opened at the bid opening on February 15 at 10 a.m.?
Yes.
Thank you. And was one bid packet from WSI and one bid packet from the appellant Walmart?
Yes.
And at the bid opening, did you read aloud the bidders' names and the prices that they offered?
Yes.
Did WSI offer pricing for both a proprietary and a non-proprietary development tool?
Yes.
Did Guam Webs offer pricing for only a non-proprietary tool?
Yes.
Okay. And I'm going to show the witness Exhibit E at page 2. So Exhibit E at page 2, were these the prices that were offered by the bidders?
Yes.
And let's see, at the time, were you aware that WSI and Guam Webs are both established businesses on Guam?
Yes.
And are you aware of that because GCC has done business with both WSI and Guam Webs?
Thank you.
So after the bid opening, were the bidders' proposals then given to the web group for the evaluation of whether proposals are adequately responded to the specifications in the scope of work?
Yes.
And did the web group determine that both bidders' proposals promised to perform all the specifications in the IFB scope of work? Okay, and did the web group recommend WSI for the contract award because it had met all the promised to perform all the specifications and offered the lowest price?
Yes.
I'm showing the witness Exhibit E at page 4. And is this the memorandum that you received from the web group?
Yes.
Okay. And then did you forward that, the web group's recommendation to GCC's president?
Yes.
Okay. And And that would, you forward it for approval of the recommendation?
Yes.
And after GCC's president approved the recommendation of WSI, did GCC send WSI a notice of bid award and a notice of non-award to Guam Webs?
Yes.
And did GCC's notice to WSI inform that it will be awarded the contract upon receipt of a list of workers assigned to GCC and a copy of WSI's business license expiring June 30th, 2016?
Yes.
And did the notice also inform the contract will be for 3 years to be renewed annually with an option at the sole discretion of GCC to renew for additional 2 year terms?
Yes.
Okay. You're showing the witness exhibit E, I'm sorry, exhibit F at page 19. And would this be the notice of award that you sent to WSI?
Yes.
Okay, and on March 11th of 2016, did WSI submit its list of workers and a copy of its business license expiring June 30th of 2016?
Yes.
Okay, and were all the workers cleared off the sex offense registry list?
Yes.
Okay. And did GCC's president sign the contract with WSI on March 14th of 2016?
Yes.
Thank you. Nothing further?
Mr. Bell, your witness.
We have prior testimony, so no cross.
Ms. Evangelista, I just want to, you said you received the list of the workers from WSI and you had to clear them from the
yes.
registry.
Yes.
Do you recall how many workers were listed from WSI?
I believe there were two. I think, yeah.
Two in addition to Ms., Mr.
Hollyhally?
Yes.
Yes.
So a total of three. Is it Mr. Holly and one other, or is it Mr. Holly and two others, to your recollection? I know.
Two. From what I recall, it was two, including Carlos Hollyhally.
Including him?
Yes.
So it would be Mr. Hollyhally plus one other for two?
Yes.
So it's two employees altogether.
Yes.
And where do you get that registry?
From the National, the Sex Offender Registry on the website.
Okay, all right. Do you recall of the address of the other employee was a Guam address?
No.
You don't remember?
Not the address of the other
Was the address of the other employee provided? Let me rephrase.
No. Just the date of birth and the full name.
And the full name.
Yes.
Okay. Right. Thank you.
Okay.
Is there any redirect or recross as a result of the public auditor's questions?
I would just have a couple questions. So, Ms. Evangelista, what information do you need to clear an employee from the sex offender?
Their full name. Their legal name, their date of birth, or their social security number, because some of them they don't want to provide their social security number, so we require that they provide us with their date of birth.
Okay, thank you. And for the record, I'll be showing exhibit F at page 22, and I think, Madam Auditor, this will answer your question.
Okay, thank you.
Is this the list of workers?
What
that was sent?
Exhibit
F at page 22, sir.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any recross? So, Ms. Evangelista, you're going to be excused as a witness for the day. You, of course, are subject to recall. And I'm going to give you the same order that I gave you on Tuesday, which is please don't discuss your testimony with any party or any of the other witnesses until these proceedings have concluded. Do you understand?
Okay.
All right. Thank you for coming.
Thank
afternoon.
You.
Ms. Rakerson, you may call your next witness.
Ms. Evangelista would be my last witness.
was the purchasing agency Rest?
Yes, the purchasing agency Rest.
Are there any rebuttal witnesses?
No.
None? And are the parties ready for their closing arguments?
Yeah.
I'm prepared.
So we will proceed with closing, beginning with the appellant, of course. That will be followed by the purchasing agency, and of course, the appellant will have the opportunity for rebuttal arguments, and you'll have the last word. Do the parties understand? This is also set forth in my schedule. Do you both understand that?
Yes, I did have one housekeeping question.
Sure.
When we reset the hearing for today's date after it was canceled, we didn't reset the remedies briefs.
Well, the remedies briefs, very good point. I was going to do that at the very end.
Oh, okay.
The remedies brief, now that's a, you don't have to submit that pleading. It's not mandatory. That's just the parties telling the OPA what they think an appropriate remedy should be. That will be due. It's 2 working days normally, so of course it won't be due on Saturday, so it will be due 5 p.m. on Monday, July the 11th. If you wish to submit that remedies brief.
So 5 p.m. Monday, July 11th.
That is correct.
Thank you.
Good, thank you.
All right. Any other housekeeping matters?
None for us.
Do the parties need any additional time to prepare their closing before we go into it?
We're okay.
All right. So, Mr. Bell, on behalf of the appellant, you have the floor for your closing argument.
Thank you. Throughout the entire appeal process, WSI's owner, Carlos Halley-Halley, noticeably failed to make any appearance or defend his winning of the bid, not even by an uncrossed declaration, as was the case for Wesley Gima. There's no credible evidence WSI timely submitted its bid. GCC had consistently taken the position that it was under no obligation to keep such a time stamp as part of the procurement record, but this position is contrary to bond law per 2GAR 3109L1. GCC initially denied that any timestamp existed, but then months into the appeal, miraculously, a timestamp appeared. It was acknowledged by WSI at the beginning of this hearing that the WSI was unlicensed, or I think their preferred language is didn't renew its license between June 30, 2013 to March 11, 2016. The bid packet warned that GCC would not consider for award, I note the future tense, any offer submitted by a bidder who has not, I note the past tense, complied with the Guam licensing law. WSI failed to meet a basic requirement of the bid then, having a valid business license at the very least prior to being awarded the bid. In any event, as a matter of law, WSI was not entitled to the local procurement preference. Per 5 GCA 5008 and the very terms of the IFB, only a business license to do business on Guam is entitled to the preference. GCC based its belief that WSI had a local office in part simply because WSI provided a local address, which, as it turns out, is a gated residential condominium. The Guam legislature thought it was a good idea to require an office or warehouse or the like, and to have a business license. What GCC had bid out was a 3-year plan with 2 optional years, not just a 3-year plan. The record reveals GCC correctly compared the bids based on a 5-year apples-to-apples comparison. In fact, GCC's top procurement officials have confirmed by their testimony the proposal was simply a 3-year price proposal would have been rejected as non-responsive. Based on the complete plan actually bid out, if not for GCC improperly crediting WSI as a locally licensed business, Guamas would have won the bid as the lowest and really only responsible and responsive bidder. Among other reasons, WSI's lack of a business license left it not responsible, because a responsible bidder means a person who has the capability in all respects to perform fully the contract requirements and the integrity and reliability which will assure good faith performance. The web group unfairly and improperly evaluated the bids, and the explanation was that reading Guamba's proposals took a lot more effort than WSI's, since WSI in many places simply stated it understood and would comply. As any failure of Guamba's to prove up its allegations are in part due to GC's withholding of emails and other procurement records, even after receiving a FOIA request, and even after being required to submit them for this appeal. GCC officials have testified that WSI understands and will comply with insufficient information for purposes of satisfying all of the bid specs. GCC improperly awarded the contract to WSI. GCC's bid review team rushed in to quickly select WSI the very same day they were asked to review the bids, despite the fact that they were not asked to make a decision until 2 weeks later. GCC failed to challenge WSI's marking all of its pages confidential, as it was required to do under 2 GAR 3109 L2 and 3. Even after WAMO's FOIA the complete appeal record, in violation of both procurement law and the FOIA law, GCC permitted WSI to self-select just 13 pages of its bid for public inspection. GCC's procurement officer testified that she only examined WSI's confidentiality claims at all because of a FOIA request, and that she could readily see, before she even verified with WSI, that many of the pages stamped confidential or not. GCC then argues that our protest was untimely, or at least earlier, GCC had argued that our protest was untimely because essentially what their argument comes down to is you should have known what you were going to complain about the moment the bids were opened, based on documents which you were not allowed to see. GCC's procurement officer testified she made the call to that the protest was untimely, even though she didn't really understand what the applicable statutory language meant. If GCC continues to make this argument at all, only betrays GCC's lack of a cogent defense for its actions. Ultimately, Dr. Okada selected WSI based on Ms. Evangelista's incorrect representation that WSI was found to be the most responsive and responsible bidder. GCC complained that the OPA should not second-guess the minutiae of the bid, and yet, to the point of being ad nauseum, GCC proceeded to grill Mr. Sharma on every single detail of his proposal. Per GCA 5425G, in the event of a timely protest, the agency shall not proceed further with the solicitation or with the award of the contract prior to final resolution of such protest, and any such further action is void. This language is subject to certain extraordinary exceptions, none of which apply here. WAMO's respectfully request that the public auditor exercise her authority to void the contract awarded by GCC and award it instead to WAMO's.
Ms. Rice? You have the floor for closing argument on behalf of GCC.
At the outset, I would note for the record that WSI had the option to come in. We notified them of this proceeding, and they're not required to, so they didn't have to come in here today or at all for this contract. So, thank you. So, basically, Guam Web's complaints for this appeal can be summarized into four. Whether Guam Web's timely lodged its bid protest, whether the local preference statute applies to this case, whether GCC properly evaluated the proposals and awarded the contract, and whether GCC erred by not providing Guam Web's with WSI's confidential proprietary information. As the record already showed before we started this hearing, and now the testimony that you've all heard, that you've heard over the last day and a half, WAMWEB's appeal lacks merit, and it must be dismissed. Regarding the timeliness of WAMWEB's bid protest, WAMWEB's repeatedly maintained that it couldn't know of any of the grounds for its bid protest until it received a response from a Sunshine Act request. And as a hearing officer has noted, the Sunshine Act is not part of this appeal, necessarily. I believe you mentioned that on Tuesday. But we went through it, and we looked at it, and the record shows different. Guam Web's primarily complained about a business license. It's Sunshine Act requested and asked for any business license information. That information is contained at Rev and Tax, and Guam Web knew that because that's where it went to get that information. And regarding that Sunshine Act request as well, it didn't request for the whole procurement record. It requested for the evaluation sheets, which is what they were given. And the confidential information from WSI, Ms. Evangelista did everything that she needed to do under the statute. She's not an IT person. She knew some of the pages marked confidential were not confidential information. So she contacted Mr. Hollihalli, it's his proprietary information, and told him that some of these pages need to be released. Can you tell me what pages need to be held back? And so Mr. Holly and Ms. Evangelista went through the proposal and figured out all of the pages that could be released. And those are the pages that Guam Webs got, because Guam Webs requested the bid proposal. Didn't request the entire bid packet, requested the proposal. And Guam Webs received that information. Now, Guam Webs also complained in their protest about WSI submitting two prices. Well, they knew that it was going to be allowed because Mr. Sharma told us he received Amendment 1, and Amendment 1 said you can submit two prices if you'd like. So Guam Webs had known about that ground for its protest really since February 5, when Amendment 1 was issued. Now, Mr. Sharma was also at the bid opening on February 15, where Ms. Evangelista read off the two prices from WSI. And that was February 15. If he was going to complain about that, there was plenty of time to do so. So really the only grounds for the Guam Webs complaints, the only grounds really on the merits that had anything to do with the Sunshine Act request would have been the evaluation sheets. And those evaluation sheets show that that ground for a protest is also meritless, because the web group determined everybody met the bid specifications. Both proposals met all the entire specifications. Now, Ms. Evangelista is not an attorney, and she read that statute. The protest, the 14-day clock started on when she sent the notice of non-award to Guam Webs. Maybe she read that statute correctly, maybe she didn't. And maybe the bid protest was timely, and maybe it wasn't. But that's all beside the point. The point is the timeliness of a timely protest is not enough to undo a proper award. The protest has to have merit. And Guam Webs' protest did not have merit. The web group evaluated thoroughly both proposals that were submitted by the bidders and saw that both proposals met all of the scope of work of specifications for the scope of work for this IFB. Now, regarding the local preference statute, we've established that Guam Webs doesn't look at the statute entirely. What they really want from that statute is that they want the price advantage to apply. Now, the clear language of that statute says the price advantage applies when you're procuring something from off Guam. It says off Guam, off island. Those are two very distinct procedures in the statute. So what Guam Webs is trying, wants OPA to do is say, all right, even if the supplies are coming from on Guam, then you still need to apply that statute. To me, that sounds a little bit unreasonable. Like, for example, say GovGuam needed car insurance, and so GSA puts out an IFB for car insurance. You have Moylan's and Calvo's both submit responses to that IFB, and their prices are close. But oops, Moylan's maybe forgot to renew its business license at the time that it submitted its bid, so its business license was a little bit late. So it wasn't renewed when it submitted its bid. Now, the ruling that Guam Webs would like, under that ruling, Moylan's would be considered an off-island vendor. They would be considered as providing insurance from off Guam. That doesn't sound reasonable to me. I don't know if it sounds reasonable to you, but there's a few canons of statutory construction that come to mind when we're looking at 5GCCA, 5008. One of them is that you look at the plain language of a statute. Now, the plain language of 5GCA, 5008, doesn't say anything about applying that statute between two on-island vendors and maybe one of them had forgot to renew a business license. There's nothing in the language of that statute that says you apply the price advantage to anything but supplies and services that are being procured from off Guam. Another canon of statutory construction says that courts are not free to read into a statute language that is not there. but rather you apply the statute as it is written. As that statute is written, you cannot apply it to this case. A third canon of statutory construction says that statutes should be interpreted to avoid absurd results, not create absurd results. And the interpretation that Guam Webs is looking for is a little bit absurd to me. I mean, given the situation, the example I gave you with Calvo and Moylan's, would we have to say that Moylan's is now providing services from off Guam, even though Moylan's has been on Guam? I've been on Guam for about 3 years now, and I know Moylan's has been here much longer than that. Now, which leads us to the statute, is there's no question that nothing will be procured from off Guam in this case. There's no question that both bidders are established here on Guam. We heard a lot of testimony about where their offices are located. There are several people that work out of home. I work from home quite a bit. I work from home a lot preparing this case. That doesn't mean that I'm providing services from off Guam. And there's no question that GCC knew that both of these bidders were located on Guam. GCC had done business with both of them in the past. I believe that Frank Camacho said that, oh yes, I know Raj. I know Raj. We've done work together with Raj. And GCC obviously knew that WSI was here on island because WSI is the current vendor of its website. Now, the appellant is saying that because WSI had not renewed its business license when it submitted its bid packet, then somehow we must be treating WSI as offering a product from off Guam. I don't know, that sounds a little bit absurd to me, because the plain language of the statute, no matter how you parse it, says the price advantage applies when something is procured from off Guam. And moreover, WSI submitted its business license expiring June 30, 2016, before GCC even awarded the contract. Submitted that business license on March 11th, and GCC's president signed the contract on March 14th. So that's what the IFB required. That's what the law requires when you look at the responsibility factors of the bidders. Responsibility is determined up to the time of the award. And also, regarding GCC's 3-year contract with two options at GCC's sole discretion to renew, the law requires that GCC have sole discretion to renew its contracts. When you're looking at renewals, 2 GAR section 3119 capital K little, I think it's K1, says that if the government's going to have a renewal option, that renewal option needs to be at the sole discretion of the territory. And it is not subject to agreement or acceptance by the contractor. So it's GCC's discretion as to whether or not it's going to renew that contract. And moreover, the contract term was 3 years. So even if we could apply what I think is the absurd result that Guam Web wants with the local preference statute, when you look at the prices that were offered, that price advantage would not even apply. And we've set forth in our hearing brief a matrix of the prices that were offered and calculated, here's the 15%, because you need to be more than 85% of the off-island price. The only way that Guam Webs would get there is if you applied that statute. If you applied that statute and you applied it to the contract where GCC has two options to renew at its sole discretion. The IFB clearly said this. Guam Webs bid acknowledged this. The notice of bid award said it's a 3-year contract with 2 annual options to renew at GCC's sole discretion. So even if we could apply the statute and get the absurd result that Guam Webs wants, that we would treat WSI as providing something from off Guam, and that they're now an off-island vendor, Guam Webs still would not have won this contract. Now, if Guam Webs had come in with a lower price, Everybody's testified. If Guam Webs was prices was the lowest, Guam Webs would have won this contract. It didn't. The proposals were properly evaluated, fairly evaluated, went through, the web group put together the specs. The web group knew what the specs said. They knew, they went through the proposals. Everybody met the specs for the proposals. In the proposals, everybody met those specs. What do? The statute says next you go to the lowest price. The lowest price was the proprietary tool offered by WSI. And so that's what that's what GCC did, and that's what the record shows. The record had already shown it. The testimony here has only even bolstered that. And regarding the whole idea that GCC rushed to evaluate these bids, they met on February 16 because that's when the most people were available. You're putting together, I think it was like five, six people together. I have to get their schedules to mesh somehow. And February 16 was the day that they did it. So the bids were open the day before. They had until the 29th. There isn't any law anywhere that says you need to take 2 weeks to evaluate proposals. And the 2 weeks time frame was GCC's internal standard anyway. What the law says is you need to fairly and adequately evaluate these proposals. And the web group did that. They gave everybody credit for everything. Then the law says that after you look at all of the proposals, everybody meets the requirements, everybody's promised to do the work, now you go and you look at the price. And GCC did that. They looked at the prices, and WSI's price was the lowest. So the contract was awarded to WSI. So under the law, GCC did everything proper. Now, Guam Webs has injected several red herrings into this case. The status of the bidder's business license didn't matter because the IFB and the law both say a business license is a matter of responsibility. Submit it up into the time of the work. Matters of responsibility we've set forth in our hearing brief, fully briefed the issue for this tribunal. OPA has said business license, it's a matter of responsibility. The law says matters of responsibility are not determined solely by the bid packet submissions. They're determined up to the time of the award. We heard testimony from Ms. Evangelista. We're talking about clearing employees off the sex offender registry. That's another matter of responsibility. It's done up to the time of the award. So the whole idea that the business license issue here has anything to do with this procurement, well, it doesn't. It doesn't at all. It doesn't have anything to do with this IFB. So it's a red herring that's been inserted into this case. Another red herring that's been inserted into this case is the treatment of the confidential information that WSI provided in its proposal. The tribunal has a copy of the entire proposal from WSI. And if you look through the proposal, you'll see that it answered all of the IFB specification, sure, under some of it was understand and will comply, but we went through Guam Webb's proposal as well. A lot of that language says understand and will comply. A lot of blanket statements. I believe Mr. Sharma even testified, well, just in case we miss something or somebody doesn't understand the language, we wanted to make sure we had it all covered. And that's absolutely fine. And as far as the Sunshine Act request is concerned, that's not part of this case either. That's a different law altogether. OPA, this is a matter of a procurement appeal. So there are several red herrings in this case that I would ask that the tribunal sift through, push aside, and focus on the law. And there, as I said in the beginning when we first started this, the outcome of this case is basically turns on one statute, and that's 5 GCA 5211 and its corresponding regulation, which is 2 GAR 3109. This is an IFB. It's basically a ministerial process. Once you've submitted your proposals, you go through and check the box. Are you promising to do the scope of work? And GCC put out this IFB for a 3-year contract with 2 annual renewals at GCC's sole discretion. This IFB said, build us a website that does X, Y, and Z. build us this website, and then host it and maintain it. We don't care what development tool you use, just build us a website that does X, Y, and Z. And the IFB also said, we don't want to see your business license until we award you the contract. Two long established companies here on Guam, GCC knew both of them, submitted proposals for this IFB. Both of the bidders promised to build a website that does X, Y, and Z and host it and maintain it. GCC found both bidders promised this. Let's look at the prices. The prices were there. WSI's proprietary proposal came in at the lowest price. What does the law say? The law says WSI gets the contract. GCC informed WSI, you're going to be awarded the contract. Now we need your list of workers and we need a copy of your business license. The business license was presented. Dr. Okada signed the contract. The contract was awarded. Under the law, GCC didn't do anything improper. Now, we did hear a little bit of testimony about how improvements that GCC is making to its procurement system. That doesn't have any bearing on this IFB, on this particular appeal here. The procurement code, I'm a lawyer. The code and the regulations to me are complex, convoluted, they're long. It's hard to know exactly what all is in there until you're confronted with the situation where you have to go and figure it out. And to GCC's improvements, everybody's got room for improvements. I don't know, but it's quite possible that OPA improves its procurement processes. You're probably better at it than anybody else because you hear all of these appeals. So all of these issues pop up. So there's some changes that are being made here, but none of those changes have anything to do with whether this IFB was properly awarded. The changes that are being made, we would submit, even if there were errors made, those mistakes are immaterial to whether GCC actually performed properly under this contract. So we would ask that either the appeal be dismissed entirely on its merits, or if GCC did make a few mistakes, that those mistakes are inconsequential and the contract should be affirmed and ratified for WSI. Thank you.
Mr. Bell, any rebuttal?
Yes. I had hoped to flesh out the fact that WSI had actual notice. However, I didn't get a chance to, I didn't want to risk a hearsay objection, so I never had was able to present anyone to show they had actual notice, so I'm glad that GCC has pointed out that they had WSI had actual notice of this hearing and obviously could have been here had they wanted to be. I have no problem saying that they didn't have to be. This is the second time GCC has made the false factual claim, or at the very least misleading claim, that WSI had not requested the record, just the proposal. And again, I don't care about FOIA law right now either. I only care about what the record, what just to be clear, when I talk about the FOIA law, I'm simply saying, we requested the records, this is what was produced. Compliance with the FOIA law is neither here nor there, but we're trying to prove what the record was, what they had and what they didn't have, right? So in the FOIA request, the fifth item requested, please provide a copy of WSI's response, parentheses submitted proposal for the bid. Yes, that is true. He also requested, please provide all records pertaining to the review, discussion, evaluation, and scoring of the bid number GCC-FB-16-006. So it's extremely clear that he requested, I don't know how else to interpret that under the whole record. I mean, he's not a lawyer, but he did request just the proposal. I just wanted to be very clear about that. Basically, okay, regarding off-island versus on-island vendors, the terms of the IFB, this is our interpretation of the law, right? The I can't find it now, but I've gone on record and I've cited it at the time, qualified local bidders. The words used again and again are qualified local bidder, which to me presumes not all local bidders are qualified for this local preference. The relevant legal question is what business, local or otherwise, qualifies for purposes of the local preference. The statute as written clearly, again, this is GCC statute that it's been citing over and over on the record in its briefing, clearly requires a business license. The legislature is not ambiguous when they state that a business license is required. And GCC presented no legal authority that a man who works from home without a business license is nonetheless entitled to the local preference as contemplated by the legislature. whether it's a good idea, whether he ought to have, hey, I could work from home too, but it's neither here nor there. We only care about what the legislature required. We have never argued that the lack of a local business license somehow classifies a vendor as off-island. We've never made that argument in any way, shape, or form. Regarding the intended terms of the length of the contract and the price comparison, we've seen GCC's witness stumble over themselves trying to explain what prices were compared, and with at least one witness, I think that was Ms. Cabrera today, whether or not they even compared the bids, which is real strange because how did other people that were all there at the same time, well, yes, we compared the prices, but she just said, no, we didn't. What are you talking about? That was very illustrative. They were also, this I find hard to understand as well. They also had a hard time, they were stumbling over themselves trying to explain how and when they had to meet and award the bid all in one day after the bid opening. They say they're all so busy, and yet they had the time to meet. All five of them had time to meet at the drop of a hat for 2 hours. They're all busy, but so I don't really understand that. Again, our interpretation of when was the business license required, right? Again, I've stated for the record, I'll just reiterate, being licensed and actually producing a copy of your license are not the same thing. They're related, they overlap, but you can have one without the other. Right? I think that's an important part. The IFB language, not my interpretation, not my subjective interpretation of some statutes, says that business license is required upon award, not the award will be made pending, or the award of a contract pending your business license. So there's no question that on February 16th, WSI was actually awarded the bid during a time which there's no disputed fact it was unlicensed. You heard Dr. Okadis, the memo of February 16th, essentially a request to award the bid to WSI, approved on this basis. And in closing, I would simply like to say that OneWeb stands by each and every argument made on the appeal. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Let me just reiterate everybody's briefs. 5 o'clock p.m. they have to be filed with the OP and served upon the other parties. And that is next week, Monday, July the 11th, 2016. And with that, we will take the matter under advisement pursuant to the procurement appeal regulation. We will render a written decision within 30 days after this hearing. Of course, the clock doesn't start ticking until tomorrow. Okay. And we'll go off the record.
We're off the record at 12:44 p.m.
Thank you.